Soon it will be Halloween. Parties will be given everywhere in the land. Our story for this Halloween takes place at just such a party. A group of youngsters have just started out on a scavenger hunt. They have 1 hour to find 6 Halloween articles. Where can they find 6 Halloween items in just 1 hour? There is only one place. The empty house on Haunted Hill. We join the group of youngsters as they are about to cross a vacant lot on their way to the haunted house.
Well, come on. Let's get it over with.
I wish we hadn't started all this.
It will be over soon.
Let's walk faster.
Oh, look! Look there!
What's the matter?
There was something in that attic window.
I didn't see anything.
Neither did I.
It looked like a white form or a white shape moving in front of the window.
Well, it's probably just your imagination. Let's keep our eyes peeled for any more strange things.
We're almost there.
Like a wolf.
There it is again.
Maybe it's a werewolf.
Probably a dog down the street howling.
Yeah.
Well, here we are. Be careful of these stairs. They look weak.
Push.
I've got goosebumps.
So have I.
I'll be quiet.
I don't want to go in.
Okay, you can wait while we go in.
No, I'll go in.
Well, since I saw the owls in the attic, I'll get the 3 owl feathers. James, you get the old mailbox over there on the wall. Lorraine, you find a handful of cobwebs somewhere. Barbara, you won't have any trouble getting an old doorknob from one of the doors.
It has to be brass.
Yes, Barbara, it has to be brass. Janice, you like cats, so you get some fur off of one of the black cats around here.
I like cats, but I don't like black cats, especially at Halloween time.
Okay, now. We all know what to get. Let's go inside.
That sound came from inside the house.
I thought it came from across the open field.
There's no large dogs around here that I know of.
Let's get what we need and then get out of here.
Jim, open the door.
Oh, it's dark in here.
What a big place.
Look how high the ceiling is.
Look at that big staircase.
I've never seen such big windows. And those drapes. Look at them. They look as if they're about to crumble into dust.
Gee, that old couple must have had a lot of money.
Let's walk very carefully now.
Let's leave right now.
We're here. We might just as well get where we came out.
Come on.
Here, kitty.
What, kitty? I don't see a cat.
Neither do I, but we need some black cat fur, don't we? So I'm looking for a cat.
Did you all hear that?
It came from upstairs.
I thought so, too.
Let's not find out. Let's go home.
Maybe the wind knocked over something. It's quiet now.
What's the matter, Barbara?
Look there.
Hey, everybody. Happy Halloween. Ah, sweet Halloween. Dan's Driving Double Feature, episode 12. We are going to the mid-60s, and we are going to do two super fun films from the mid-60s that I get a real kick out of, both of which are on Blu-ray now, although one of the Blu-rays isn't that great, but it is Orgy of the Dead from 1965 and Mad Monster Party from 1967. Yes, we're going to do sort of a late entry in the nudie cutie sort of striptease burlesque type craze of sexploitation, and then we are going to do a Rankin and Bass super fun monster mashup kind of things. Obviously the theme here is monsters, because Orgy of the Dead has the Emperor of the Dead, and is it the Black Ghoul, I believe is her name. Yes, the Black Ghoul, and you get a mummy and you get the Wolfman, and then of course Mad Monster Party has all the monsters in it, and it's super fun. And what we're going to do throughout the interstitials this time around aren't going to be drive-in commercials. They're going to be random snippets of Halloween things that I like. And just random bits. Sometimes you'll get a song. Sometimes just random nonsensory and like that. So without further ado, let's hop into the world of Orgy of the Dead.
Have you ever seen an orgy? An orgy of the dead? If not, let us show you a few scenes from our own Orgy of the Dead. Join the Master of the Dead and his equally infamous Princess of Darkness as they judge the beautiful Gold Girl and her sister companions. See, the Indian girl who tossed her lovers into fires and now must dance with fire. See, the bride who murdered her husband and now must dance perpetually before his skeleton. See, the curvaceous streetwalker. See, the Hawaiian girl who loved snakes and now must entice them forever with her snake-like movements that will also thrill you forever. See, the zombie in her macabre dance. See, the slave girl who was once a cruel queen and now, in turn, is abused by her subjects as she is forced to entertain them for eternity. See, the voluptuous cat girl as she reacts to the whips of pleasure. See, the skull ritual, a beautiful señorita as she quenches her irresistible thirst from her lover's skull. See, a woman who in life loved her own body, but now must exhibit herself to please all, including you. See, the gold girl who worshipped gold above all else, her reward is complete transformation into solid gold. Shocking, terrifying, bizarre, and thrilling. Why don't you join us? Join the Orgy of the Dead. Coming to you in flaming color and widescreen soon.
Monsters to be pitied. Monsters to be despised. From the innermost depths of our world. Caught in that space between the living and the dead. A night of the ghouls. Hey, Criswell is in this. That should be more than enough to get anyone to watch it. Let me go through the plot real quick. This is probably going to be real quick. The Mad Monster Party plot will take a few minutes. The Orgy of the Dead is pretty straightforward. We start off with Criswell giving us a little gab, more or less what I just told you. He's in sort of a small mausoleum tomb type thing, and he rises up out of the coffin looking good, sort of very Bela Lugosi-ish. His hair is as gorgeous as ever. And then we get a great opening credit sequence with a woman painted in gold, a la Goldfinger style. I'm no boob expert, but hers look a little strange in the gold. They look a little off. I'm sure they're lots of fun, but they look a little off. Although, you know, how far be it for me to denigrate a boob while we're on here. So Criswell makes his prediction, we get the credits, then we meet Shirley and Bob. Shirley's played by Pat, with a different wig on, and she's got a very tight blouse. She's sort of packing heat in her blouse. Bob's kind of an idiot. He is a writer. It's more or less the middle of the night, and they're driving to a graveyard. It looks like out in the middle of the desert, because he's a well-known horror writer, and he gets ideas there, but he just ends up crashing their car, and the two of them end up stumbling around in the woods for a while, and coming upon this strange ceremony between Criswell and the Black Ghoul, a.k.a. the Empress of the Night, the Princess of Darkness, I think he calls her. And basically what the two of these two goofballs do is they sit in this small clearing, little space, with the Criswell's tomb on the other end of it. And they basically sit there and they watch striptease routines. Lots of sort of burlesque-themed routines. They watch 10 in all. A lot of women sort of moving back and forth, so their boobs kind of go back and forth, that kind of thing, with a lot of music that doesn't always seem to be matched up to the dance itself. I wrote down here that the Streetwalker dance, she's the second one, her dance in particular, the music doesn't really seem to match what's going on. So there are 10 dances. There's an Indian gal and some flames, the Streetwalker with a skeleton, a gold gal, who is Pat, cat girl, a slave girl with some whips, a matador, a volcano / snake gal, a wedding gal, she does strange things with her boobs too, a zombie gal, and a fluff gal. And they all come out and they dance for 3, 4, 5 minutes each, and then, you know, go back to, well, they're either sent sort of back to this strange space, or they're allowed to move on. It's all up to Criswell. In fact, and somewhere in there, Shirley and Bob are captured and by a mummy and a wolfman, no less, and tied to posts in the middle of this clearing and made to watch the damned dance. And literally, that's the movie, is it's just these 10 dances and they watch them, and Shirley and Bob spend their whole time trying to get themselves untied. And the black ghoul, she keeps saying, she wants the girl, I want the girl. The problem is that Criswell isn't too good with time. And spoiler, the sun comes up after the 10th dance. And all the dead are transformed into skeletons. And Shirley and Bob, they're going to be all right. They've had a hell of an evening watching the orgy of the dead. But they're going to be all right. And that's Orgy of the Dead. It's pretty straightforward. Let's listen to this, and then I'm going to give you some of my thoughts on the film.
What's the matter, Barbara?
Look there. Look at what? That picture. The eyes in that picture move.
What picture?
The picture on the wall.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure. I thought the picture was looking at me. Then I walked a little bit, and the eyes followed me.
I'm feeling the painting, and it's just a picture. The eyes are painted on the picture.
Barbara, you must have imagined it.
Maybe so, but I was so sure. Oh, look.
Now what?
A brass doorknob, just what I'm looking for.
That's a good idea. The rest of us better get looking for our things, too.
I'll go out on the front porch and pull that old mailbox off the wall.
Hey, James, you dropped the mailbox?
James, can't you hear us?
He's just trying to scare us.
James, speak up. Let's go out and see what happens. You girls wait here. Carl and I will go out on the front porch.
There's nothing here. Are you heterosexual? The film that will satisfy every over-sexagesimal adult in gorgeous and shocking astrovision and sexy color, with Criswell and a bevy of gorgeous girls, Orgy of the Dead. That's one of the posters. And I think it's being pretty bold at the top to ask me what my sexuality is, but that's how it went. So this is, as you all know, and I imagine you all know, this was had a script by Mr. Ed Wood, directed by Stephen C. Apostolatoff, and I forget what exactly his fake name on... Oh, it was A.C. Stevens, sorry. I think this was his first film. He made a whole bunch of nudie, sexploitation-y films, and I believe this was his first one. If not his first, very close to being his first. And he shows a definite ability to keep things in focus and point a camera at half-naked women dancing. A lot of they're more like dance routines. I guess that's what sort of a lot of the burlesque stuff was. Anyways, that's what makes it tricky. It's sort of the odd setting, this field, and there's constant like dry icy smoke floating through it, and these two big guard guys and little loinclothy type thing standing nearby, and Shirley and Bob tied up, and it keeps cutting away to Criswell and the black ghoul, and sometimes they speak and say wonderful Ed Wood dialogue, and sometimes they don't say a word, they just nod. And like right now I've got Pat's on here, and she's doing her gold girl dance, and she's got a big fake I hesitate to call it blonde. It's more like a white or gray wig. And she's doing a lot of jazz hands and spinning around and spinning around. And it is one of the least erotic things I've ever seen in my life. Now, Criswell's character, he seems to really like it. He seems to really sort of get off on it. But I am in... you know, I can appreciate a beautiful half-naked woman dancing. The joy of the film is that it believes that we can all appreciate this for 92 minutes. That's one of the reasons why I love it. Now, okay, the main reason why I probably love it is because, one, it is so goofball that it's just this dance after dance after dance, cutting away to Criswell, cutting away to sort of wisecracking mummy and wolfman. And the wolfman, as other folks have mentioned, is just wearing like a wolfman mask. At one point when he goes, "Oh!" and looks up to the sky, you can see up his mask, which is awesome. And obviously the whole thing, apart from some stock footage of a car driving along a road and Shirley and Bob sitting in sort of a car mock-up, the whole thing takes place on this one set with the little tomb. And it's just so great. I mean, you know, I hesitate to call it the best film ever made, but you know, let's be honest. It's a pretty wonderful film, and part of the wonderfulness of it being just how unerotic all the dancing is. In fact, some of it, like I would say, the Indian gal with the flames and the wedding gal, she does a weird boob thing that is so unerotic as to. I didn't even know how to describe how unerotic it is. I mean, like, imagine your grandma. Your grandma's more erotic than this thing she does with her boobs. All right. So, yeah, you get this gorgeous, wonderful dialogue that's this Ed Wood dialogue. And I gladly spend a day quoting it all at you, but that's not really what I'm here for right now. Just imagine it's wonderful. Imagine it's... I mean, no one wrote for Criswell like Ed Wood did. And it's such a joy to hear this dialogue. I mean, Shirley and Bob's dialogue, apart from when Bob is describing why they're going out to the graveyard in the middle of the night, Shirley and Bob's dialogue is pretty much, "I think I could get my hand loose. I think I'm getting this untied. Oh, don't act like we're getting untied." You know, that's mostly their dialogue. It's the undead who get all the sharp stuff in this. And it is great. It really is. "More gold! More gold!" See, the gold gal, she sits down on the ground. The two guys with loincloths basically drop gold on her. And it's, "More gold! More gold!" That's Criswell yelling that. That's not the gold gal. The gals don't speak. They just come in and do their dances. So, one of the things I always like to think about this... Whenever I'm watching, I like to think about this movie. The joy of... the fact that even though they all turn to skeletons at the end, Criswell and the Black Ghoul and such, I'd love to think that, I believe they mentioned it's on a full moon, forgive me if I'm wrong, but like the next time there's a full moon, they're right back there. They're doing this exact same thing. You know, it's like they just go through a bunch of... I'm wondering if... So what is the mythology behind all of this? Is it specifically like... Is it... That he, like, maybe one night he looks at gals, one night it's guys, but when he brings the gals out, he likes them to all do strip teases. So it's not like these aren't, you know, it's not like he's watching, like, there was a crash of a like a bus crash that was filled with burlesque dancers, and now he's sort of going through all of them, seeing who should go on and who shouldn't. This is just 10 sort of regular gals who now in the afterlife have sort of, he makes them into sort of burlesque dancers or something like that. I'm just wondering, like I said, the mythology, because I can't imagine this is meant to be, "Oh, look, on the docket tonight, we've got 10 exotic dancers." I would think it would be more like, "Okay, on the docket tonight, we've got this gal who loves snakes, and this one loves gold. Have them come out and do some exotic dancing." The great thing about the dance is I call them striptease at one point, but they're not really. They come out dancing more or less fully clothed. It cuts away to something, and then when it cuts back to them, they're in their G-strings dancing and spinning and all that kind of thing. So it's interesting in that they never, although technically they're sort of strip teases, no one actually strips. The clothes all come off screen, which is great, you know, which is another thing about the movie that's just completely goofy. And I mean, do I need I don't need to, but do I need to say things like the pillars that Shirley and Bob are tied to clearly are wobbling whenever anyone do things to them? Not that that's like, you know, not that I'm being all Golden Turkey Award on you or anything like that, but it's all part of the joy because it's got that Ed Wood thing where it creates this weird world that you want to ask more questions about, that you want to know more about, that you're like, where did this sort of come from? And you want to know who, I mean, if Criswell's character is some sort of gateway evil guy, you know, sending people to hell or allowing them to move on to heaven or whatever it is like that, you know, he really got this fetish for the dancing gals. I'm always surprised that Shirley doesn't dance in the end. You think he would have made Shirley dance, but she does not. I mean, obviously Pat dances, and the movie as I'm watching it right now, she is covered in gold, a la Goldfinger, the gal in Goldfinger. So, and she's being taken into the tomb. Let's talk about the Wolfman and the Mummy real quick. They're great guys, and they've got these great dubbed, Wolfman especially has got this great dubbed voice, and they're just sort of, they don't, I mean, the gals are already, here, I'm lost in the mythology again, they go and they bring in but they don't bring in all the dancers, they bring in Shirley and Bob, and they bring in some of the dancers, and they're just kind of like these goofball monsters who are just sort of hanging out. I love the fact that this evil Criswell here and his lady friend, they have a werewolf and mummy sort of on tap. I guess the mummy is undead, but the werewolf's not undead unless it's an undead werewolf. Wait a minute, the mummy's undead, the werewolf's not. Yes, unless it's an undead werewolf. Which I guess it could be. There's no reason why it couldn't be an undead werewolf, huh? I mean, that makes about as much sense as anything else in this world. And I love this. The structure, obviously, because there is a story that's being told with Shirley and Bob and their accident and getting tied to the pole and trying to escape and day approaching. But of course, the story stops for the strip, not the strip, the burlesque dances. So it's sort of like you get 2 or 3 minutes of story, then 4 or 5 minutes of dance. 2 or 3 minutes of story, 4 or 5 minutes of dance. And it's so much fun. The Mummy and the Wolfman don't show up until 32 minutes into the film. I think that's sad. I think they should have showed up almost immediately. I really like the Mummy and the Wolfman. You put a Mummy and a Wolfman in something, I am in. I like, too, that we seem to be in a desert where they were driving, but it's very jungly, the set. Now, Orgy of the Dead. There are folks who find Orgy of the Dead boring. And I've seen that, like, it's got some fun Ed Wood dialogue and Criswell, you know, but the rest of it is just boring dances. Oh, well, who cares if they're just boring dances? One, it's a little off, but it's more or less, this is like crazy sexploitation direct from 1965. You're seeing a wonderful time capsule right in your face. And here it is. It's joyous. Is the dancing boring? It can be. It can be. I think there are enough cutaways to Criswell and him saying random things that keep it interesting. If you like seeing ladies dance, as I said before, this isn't particularly erotic, but the dancing isn't all bad. And I just find anyone who can dismiss this film just by saying, there's some fun dialogue, but it's boring, it's just like, you don't understand the way exploitation or sexploitation works, because Orgy of the Dead, everything it sets out to do, which is almost everything, it does perfectly. And I adore this film. I just think it is, it's incredibly fun, it's incredibly strange. I remember the first time I watched it, I think, was in late 95. I saw it with my friend Kevin J. Jolly, the J stands for Jolly, and we were just a mix of awe and hilarity and confusion, and when the Wolfman and the Mummy showed up, we were like, now this movie has everything, and it was just, wow. And then it says, based on the novel Orgy of the Dead by Ed Wood, and we were thinking, what the hell is that novel like? I still haven't read it. Maybe the novel has all the mythology in it. Maybe the novel gives us everything that I'm sort of straining to get at here. I don't know. But, yeah, Orgy of the Dead, it It's so much fun. I get so much joy out of the craziness that is Orgy of the Dead. Criswell should have had more films that he was the star of. So, let me give you a little bit of this, and I'm going to come back. I'm just going to talk a little about the background of the film, a little about sexploitation, maybe read a review or two, and, yeah, listen to this.
Carl and I will go out on the front porch. There's nothing here. He's gone. There's the mailbox on the porch. Hey, James, where are you?
James,
if this is a gag, it's gone far enough.
Jim, Carl, come back in here. We heard something upstairs.
What did you hear?
It sounded like footsteps walking, and then they stopped. Then there was a struggle.
Then the footsteps started again.
It might have been James,
but we must go upstairs and see.
Didn't you see him?
No. We found the old mailbox on the floor, but no trace of James.
Well, here we are at the stairs. Let's go up.
Now, the history of sexploitation and sexiness in film, obviously a lengthy one. As someone once said, Thomas Edison invented the movie camera, and 15 minutes later, some guy was getting his girlfriend to take her clothes off in front of it. So it's a long history. I'm just gonna hop to the 50s. The Hays Code has fallen, and the burlesque films begin, and they're pretty much just, well, variations of what we see in Orgy of the Dead. They're just, the camera sits down and gals come out and they do their burlesque dances. And there's a lot of, if you go to a lot of the Something Weird DVDs, Something Weird Video DVDs, you'll see a lot of sort of burlesque shorts. And they also, I believe, released, was it Teaserama and Picarama, the ones with Betty Page. And following the burlesques, you got the nudist colony films, Beast That Killed Women, Beast That Killed Women, Monster Camp Sunshine is my favorite of those. Let's Go to the Drive-In, Something Weird video double feature, so much fun. And you got Blaze Star Goes Nudist, Hide Out in the Sun, Nude on the Moon, all kinds of nudist stuff. And I just wanted to read a paragraph from Research, Incredibly Strange Films, Volume 10, where it's, for the most part, nudist films are among the most boring movies ever made. These accounts of what supposedly go on behind the gates of the world's nudist colonies consist of little more than endless games of volleyball. Any activity that could possibly be construed as sexual is debarred. Rarely do people touch each other, and they never kiss or hug. While the burlesque films are cinematically dull, the nudies are just plain vapid, offering little more than endless shots of nude people having fun in the sun. And the thing about it was that after a lengthy 1957 court case involving Garden of Eden, a particularly boring nudist film, it was decided that nudity on its own has no erotic content and therefore is not obscene. So soon after that, the 50s ended, 60s began, and you got Russ Meyer with The Immortal Mr. T's, which made a ton of money. And then soon after that, Herschel Gordon Lewis and David Friedman's The Adventure of Lucky Pierre. And then you started to get the films that were just basically lots of nude women sort of running around for one reason or another. You get films like The House on Bear Mountain and Kiss Me Quick, which was, hey, it was the early 60s. It was the time of, Monster Bash and tons of late 50s, early 60s. There were tons of monster-related songs, and obviously the Universal films hit TV and monsters. People were crazy for monsters, Hammer films. And so why not monsters with naked ladies? Now, as the 60s went on and we went through the nudie cuties, they began to develop into the roughies, more or less. I think by like 64 or so, we were more or less into the roughies. So it makes Orgy of the Dead slightly strange, because it came out in 65 and it's very much nudie cutie slash burlesque, which are kind of out of vogue at the time, but they're very much in vogue in my living room. So Orgy of the Dead is, yeah, it's A.C. Stevens there. Mr. Apostoloff, is it? Yes. And Ed Wood Jr. working together. I've read that on Wikipedia it says that Ed Wood was like, did casting, and he held cue cards, production assistant. He did all sorts of stuff on it. The novel, I believe, was written actually after the movie came out. So, and I still want to read it. So I can't imagine what it would be like. But yeah, the novel, I believe, was written afterwards. And the movie is just one of those that it sort of, you heard about it for years, and it was like, oh, it's got Criswell in it. And for a time at the beginning, Criswell mentions the Night of the Ghouls, and this was before Ed Wood's Night of the Ghouls had been released. So kind of claiming some space for that glorious good time. But Orgy of the Dead was always one of those films where you'd hear the title and your first thought was, oh my gosh, what is this? What on earth could this film be? And then we actually found out what the film was. It was so innocent and so silly and so charming and so goofy that it's how could you not love it? I mean, it's just it's fun. It's fun. Let me read. I just want to read from Psychotronic Encyclopedia, Michael Weldon's page 533, Orgy of the Dead, 1965, FOG Distributors, Fog Distributors. Wonderful dated nudie horror film with a screenplay by Ed Wood Jr. It features Criswell and strippers like Texas Starr and Bunny Glazer. It takes place in a cemetery set where a couple show up to find material for a novel. The Master of the Dead, Criswell, and the Princess of Darkness, Fawn Silver, have them tied to posts and make them watch sinners being judged. Two native men in striped skirts get to beat their former slave owner, a topless blonde. A topless murderess has to marry a skeleton. One woman is turned into a gold statue, and another is turned into a cat. She wears a leopard suit with holes for her breasts to stick out. With a werewolf, a mummy, and even better dialogue than Plan 9 from Outer Space, I would say yes, because almost all the dialogue is either delivered by Criswell or the Black Ghoul or a werewolf or a mummy. So yeah, I'm definitely on board with all that. Yeah, the cat suit is an unfortunate one. When she comes out dancing in the cat suit and there's like a hole in her boobs are sticking out of it, it's a little unfortunate. Now, I got one more thing to read. And this is from the horror film from, what is it, It's Cine Books from Evanston, Illinois. Cine Books Home Library Series number 4, 1989. This is the horror film book that I affectionately refer to as the We Hate Horror Films horror film book. Now, Orgy of the Dead really isn't... Yeah, I guess it is a horror film. It's Orgy of the Dead, 1.5 stars. Here we go. This is a story of those in the twilight time. Once human, now monsters. In a void between the living and the dead. Monsters to be pitied. Monsters to be despised. A night with the ghouls. The ghouls reborn from the innermost depths of the world. So goes the introduction by the master of the dead, Criswell, to this horror film, which is basically a collection of boring striptease routines filmed in a fog-shrouded cemetery set. The plot involves a writer, Shirley, Pat Berenger, and her fiancé, Bob, William Bates, who visit a cemetery one night to gather material for her next book. They run into the Master of the Dead and his partner, the Princess of Darkness, Fawn Silver, looking a lot like Elvira, who preside over a ceremony to judge recently deceased sinners. Captured by a mummy and a wolfman, Bob and Shirley are tied up and forced to watch the presentation of the accused, including an Indian maiden, Bunny Glazer, who performs erotic dances into love fire, a prostitute, Colleen O'Brien, who robbed and then murdered her clients, a cat lover, Texas Starr, condemned to spend eternity in a really silly cat costume, a bride, Barbara Norton, who killed her husband and now must forever remain with his skeleton, and several others, while the Master of the Dead, the Princess of Darkness, the Mummy, and the Wolfman look on. At one point, the Master of the Dead cackles, "Torture, torture, it pleasures me. Bad dancing, bad music, bad dialogue, and Criswell. It must mean only one thing, an Edward D. Wood Jr. movie." Unfortunately, Wood only wrote this one, but his priceless dialogue is more than worth the price of admission. There are more reviews and things floating around out there, but what you really need to do is you need to run out right now. I'm looking at my copy right here. You need to run right out, and you need to buy Virgin Syndromes. Vinegar Syndromes. Are you a heterosexual? Virgin Syndromes Blu-ray DVD combo of it. It's got the movie scanned, a 2K scan from the negative. It looks like candy. It's like, wow. Like this alongside, say, Deadly Weapons. Well, maybe Double Agent 73. I think it's more colorful. Would be something. It's a commentary track with Rudolph Gray, Ed Wood biographer, and the great Frank Henenlotter, exploitation filmmaker. Their commentary is a hoot. Rudolph's a little quiet in it. His volume's a little low, but Frank's volume is very high. Impressions of Nadija. Interview with actress Nadija Dobrev. Orgy of the Ted. Interview with Ted V. Michael. Still Gallery. Cover designed by Earl Kessler. Reversible cover artwork. English subtitles. It's a great disc. I recommend it highly. Just came out. So I recommend you pick that up. I recommend you watch Orgy of the Dead 4, 5, 6, 7 times this holiday season. Now, that orgy is over. We have a different sort of orgy coming up with Mad Monster Party? Here we go.
Mad Monster Party!
Mad Monster Party!
Starring Boris Karloff and, in order of their appearance,
Dracula,
Frankenstein,
the Werewolf,
the Hunchback,
the Mummy,
Dr. Jekyll,
Mr. Hyde,
and, in order of his disappearance,
the Invisible Man.
Also starring Phyllis Diller as the hostess with the least.
Mad Monster Party!
Dead. It's a come-as-you-are party that's out of this world.
You don't get invited.
You get committed.
It's a psychedelic scary.
With the grooviest ghouls of all time.
Mad Monster Party!
Lunch, anyone?
It's a blast.
Yeah. Mad Monster Party? It does have a question mark after it, which is why I keep saying it like that. I may stop saying it like that if I have to say it one too many times. But we're in 1967. This is a Rankin and Bass, so it's shot, it's using animagic, which basically means it looks like like Santa Claus is coming to town, or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, or any of their others, and it looks pretty fun. It looks pretty neat, pretty fun. So this is, let's see, it is produced by Arthur Rankin Jr., directed by Jules Bass, written by Len Korobkin. Sorry, Len. Harvey Kurtzman and Forrest J. Ackerman. There's an interesting mix right there. So, well, technically, the title card just came up on the screen next to me, and it said this is 66. Okay, well, 66. The DVD Blu-ray says 67 on it, so I'm going to let it ride. So what's happened is Dr. Frankenstein, who runs the Worldwide Organization of Monsters, lives on an island in the middle of nowhere, and he is going to retire. He has created a formula that will destroy matter. Basically, it looks like an atom bomb going off, and it will destroy matter. So he's going to retire. So he invites all the monsters, your Dracula, well, Frankenstein monster, and his wife, played by the voice by Phyllis Diller, are in the castle. There's also in the castle, there is a gal named Francesca, who's lovely red-headed, is red-haired and red-headed together. And there's a guy named, who is sort of a Peter Lorre kind of zombie. And there are lots of zombie waiters and servants and such. So Dr. Frankenstein, sends out the invitations to all of his members of the organization, to Dracula, to the Hunchback of Notre Dame, to the Invisible Man, to Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, to the Wolfman, to the Creature from the Black Lagoon. Everyone gets one. And they all kind of slowly head towards the island. Someone else gets one, too. A guy named Felix Flanken, who works in like a soda jerk in like a drugstore. And he has thick glasses on and has trouble seeing when they come off, and he's very hapless, and he sounds like Jimmy Stewart, and he is the nephew of Dr. Frankenstein. He's invited too. He hasn't seen his uncle in ages, and he doesn't realize what he's getting into. Everyone gradually, slowly, they all arrive at the island, and they have a lovely dinner. With a great skeleton, sort of Beatlesque band playing a couple of good songs. It's a mummy, yeah. It's a mummy. And they have this big party, and Dr. Frankenstein announces that he is retiring, and there'll be a new head of the organization soon. Dracula thinks it's him. Francesca thinks it might be him, so she cozies up to Dracula. The monster's wife wants it to be the monster. Everyone, some people seem interested, some people not so much. Turns out it's basically the doctor wants to put Felix in charge of everything. Felix arrives very late, not realizing that this place is full of monsters. He arrives the next morning, and his uncle kind of shows him all these monsters these little monsters he's created in his laboratory, not the main monsters, and in song kind of tells him, you know, you should take over. And Felix is kind of thinking about it, and he sort of falls for Francesca, but Francesca is hooked up with the other monsters to more or less kill Felix, which doesn't quite work. And then eventually they kind of turn on Francesca. I don't want to go all the way until the end, but the monsters turn on Francesca, and there is the ever-present It is some sort of monster that was invited to their last meeting and just destroyed everything. So Francesca sends out an invitation to It. And the movie climaxes with the monsters kind of coming after Felix and Francesca, who have formed sort of a friendship. And It arrives. And if you haven't seen the movie, you may want to hop ahead, let's say, 1 minute. I'll go quickly, but let's say hop ahead 1 minute to the next interstitial. But It is King Kong, basically. And King Kong arrives and wreaks havoc, and Felix and Francesca have some wacky King Kong and a King Kong style antics with Kong, and it's so crazy and is wonderful. And in the end, Francesca and Felix get off the island as it has grabbed all the monsters, including Dr. Frankenstein, who has a vial of his exploding stuff in his hands. Dr. Frankenstein has the vial in his hand, and Kong has everyone else, you know, including the doctor, in his hands. And basically the movie ends with the vial being dropped and the island going up in a huge explosion. Now, we know that Francesca is actually a robot. Is actually sort of more robotic than the monster, kind of a variation of what the monster was. But Felix says, you know, he can love her, no problem. They can still love. And then there's one more little twist right at the end, but I won't go into that. Now, let me hit you with this little bit of something here, and I will come back and just talk about Mad Monster Party for a while. See you soon.
Look as if they were rotting away.
The stairs are so dusty that we leave our footprints when we walk.
Say that again.
I said, where we walk, we leave footprints in the dust.
Then how do you explain that?
Look there.
Footprints up ahead on the stairs.
Did any of you walk up these stairs?
We've all been together. None of us have been up here.
Look at the shape of these footprints.
Carl?
What would you say they look like?
They've got three big toes with claws or nails at the end of each one.
More like a wolf?
Like a wolf's footprints.
And they've just been made, too.
If what made those footprints is doing that howling, then it must be a wolf.
I have always and will ever enjoy the big monster get-togethers. Now, Orgy of the Dead obviously was much calmer. There was just the Wolfman and the Mummy. But there were, you know, ghouls and such and strange strippers. Mad Monster Party is full-on get-together, full-on brouhaha. I mean, I guess it all started, Frankenstein meets the Wolfman was sort of putting the toe in the water. And it's funny with the Universal ones, and I guess I'm going to go off on a bit of a tangent here, so bear with me, but it's funny with the Universal ones that apart from maybe House of Dracula and Abbott Excel Meets Frankenstein, well, that's most of them, actually. Okay, well, I was going to say, Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman is so schizophrenic in the way it tells its story, and House of Frankenstein is nutty. It's almost more of an anthology film. Like, they didn't quite trust people to get all the monsters being there together. By the time they get to Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, everything seems to be fine, and it's super fun. And then, of course, you get all those late 50s, early 60s, with Monster Mash being the biggest of them, songs about monsters partying together. I'm just looking at some titles here. What's Screamin' Ball at Dracula Hall? We got the Mummy's Ball. We got Frankenstein's Den. Let's see, what else do we have? Werewolf, the Niles 01, Nightmare Mash, wow, Frankenstein's Party. Let's see, I'm just looking at titles here. Oh, one of my favorites is Burt Convy's The Monster Hop. And there's just a lot of the Midnight Monsters Hop, The Monster Hop. Well, that's two songs called The Monster Hop, one by Jimmy D, one by Burt Convy. You would be surprised, Nightmare Hop, you would be surprised at how many songs there are from the late 50s, early 60s that are about monsters getting together and partying. That's why there's that great Mr. Show sketch that examines, do monsters get together and party when human beings aren't around? You should see, I think it's in season 4 of Mr. Show. It's very, very funny. And I actually put together something that I have it around here somewhere, called the Rockin' Monster Bash. It is approximately, I think, 96 songs, none of them in stereo. So I think the latest one is maybe 63 or 64. I think they go from about 57 to 64, and it's almost 100 songs. I could have done 100 songs if I could have fit them on the 3 CDs. I want it to be like a box set, like 3 CDs, and they have sort of a flow to them. And it's Rockin' Monster Bash, Volumes 1, 2, and 3. And they have all kinds of great songs, many of them involving monsters getting together and partying. And they're friggin' hooked. I love these songs so much. I was introduced to them. Well, I've been hearing them on and off all my life, but David the Rock Nelson's Shorts, Volume 2 from 1982, all of his shorts have those sorts of songs on them, and that led me to track them down, and now I have probably 6 or 7 CDs that I've purchased over the years filled with these songs. I love them, I love them. So, a bit of a tangent, but yeah, you get those get-togethers, and now you get Mad Monster Party, and post that, obviously, you'll get more stuff like Monster Squad and Drac Pack, and the that House of Frankenstein miniseries that was on like 20 years ago, and it's just fun. So how does Mad Monster Party stack up to all those other good time monstery things? I think it does it quite well. If I can sort of rate them, the Groovy Ghoulies is probably my favorite. Matching doing Sabrina and the Groovy Ghoulies is probably my favorite. I just love how goofy they are. I love how much fun they're constantly having. And it's better than Drac Pack. Although Drac Pack is growing on me. I would say it's Monster Squad might be a little better. Monster Squad is kind of repetitive, but that was just the way Saturday morning shows were. My favorite stuff, though, might be the songs. I really do love the songs. But or having Costello Meet Frankenstein. But let me get the stuff I don't like about Mad Monster Party out of the way first, and then we'll dive into some of the good stuff. First, I don't like the songs. Apart from the songs that the skeleton guys do, I really am not enamored of the songs. They can go take a leap, as far as I'm concerned. The song, especially that Francesca sings to Dracula after the party on the balcony, it's only like 2.5-3 minutes long, but it feels like it goes on for half an hour. And the only good thing about that scene is the camera is poised out sort of over the water. Because they're, you know, it's a castle on an island in the middle of the ocean. It's poised out over the water, looking over the balcony as Francesca and Dracula move around on the balcony. And at one point, the camera completely does a 180 and is on the other side of them, sort of up against, like, the doors they came out of, looking at them across the balcony and the ocean. And that's a lovely moment. But the songs themselves, song itself, that one, I can't do the songs in this. And the other thing is, and this is the songs contribute to this, is the length. The movie's 95 minutes. It could have been 10 minutes shorter, maybe even 15. I love the fact that we have 95 minutes worth of Animagic, Rankin-Bass, Monster Party stuff. I'm absolutely thrilled that we have this. At the same time, I wish there was a bit less of it. It's very leisurely paced. It picks up a bit sort of in the last half hour, but it's going nowhere fast for the first half. It goes off on all sorts of tangents, and it has to sort of, it introduces all the monsters getting their invitations, and they all take a boat along with Felix, to the island, and everyone's got their little shtick they do, and Felix gets this long scene where he just does all this slapsticky stuff, and then like Yech gets like 10 or 15 minutes, and then just keeps going off in these tangents. It doesn't really settle in until about halfway, which in one way is super fun because you're exploring the world and you're getting all this silliness and things like that. In another way, I want to say even maybe kids of that time might have been a little get moving a little bit. I could be wrong, however. I could be wrong on that. But, yeah, that's one of the problems, and I've always found it too long. Now, that's not a reason not to watch. I mean, I think if you sit down with Mad Monster Party, you are sitting down to put yourself into this gorgeous world that Rankin and Bass have created. So to fault it for being too long is only sort of, is it aesthetic? It's only sort of structural, I guess, problem. The aesthetic is so gorgeous. Apart from the scene with Felix in as a soda jerk there, I could have just watched all of it all day. Just looked at the characters and the sets and everything. It's just gorgeous. So in one way, bad. In another way, I'm okay with it. The other one is tricky. Felix Flanken, who isn't in the first 35 minutes or so much until he really arrives on the island. I'm just not a big fan of Felix. I don't fully understand why he sounds like Jimmy Stewart, and I just find him more annoying than anything. And this isn't his fault. This is an of the times thing, but one of the ways he gets Francesca over to his side is by slapping her when she gets hysterical, which feels a little weird 50 years down the line. Maybe it even did then, or maybe I know that was more like when a woman gets hysterical back then, you give her a slap and that knocks her out of it. I wasn't really alive then, so I can't really vouch for the veracity of this claim, but it's something they do, and I'm not too thrilled on that. So, but what do I like about the movie? Everything else. Jack Davis did the designs. It's gorgeous. They're gorgeous. There are some funny moments. The sort of, like I said, the overall, the whole look of the movie is just so much fun. And like the scene when the monsters arrive at the castle is just so cool. It's like a much bigger version of, what is it, the Halloween that almost wasn't, or, you know, the night Dracula saved the world, or whatever it is, that 1979, 1980, Marriott Hartley, Judd Hirsch special with all the monsters. It's sort of like a much broader version of that. And I just love it. And I love the opening with Dr. Frankenstein by himself. It's Boris Karloff doing the voice, and it's so great to hear him. And the opening credits where all the monsters get their invitations is so cool. And it's just like, I love this world, just filled with all these great classic monsters, just bringing them all together. And the Wolfman and the Mummy, and then Dr. Jekyll having his little sip of something from his cane and becoming green-faced Mr. Hyde. It's so great. And then when they hit the forest and they're trying to kill Felix, and then when they're trying to kill Felix and Francesca, it is just... It's a good time. It's sort of right in there. You're like, this is exactly what I want from this movie. If possibly in the first half it was a little slower, a little off, there are definitely wonderful moments. I mean, the scene with the big with the band and the dinner and the Dr. Frankenstein's announcement is so good. And I don't know. I love a monster mashup, and this is a very fun one. I mean, it's just fun. Again, like I said, as far as they go, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein is certainly funnier, and it's better paced, and the Groovy Ghoulies, I think, I love Horrible Hall so much, but this Mad Monster Party is so worth your time if you love these monster things, and it's fun. It's super fun. I mean, I can gush about it for ages, but I think Mad Monster Party is one that If you've never seen it, give it a try. Remember, yeah, it does go on too long. And remember that there are the songs aren't that great and Felix is kind of annoying. But seeing all the monsters there, and it's just... Yeah, it's just... I don't remember really watching this movie when I was a kid. I'm sure I must have. It'll bring back memories of Rankin Bass if you grew up with Rankin Bass. It'll bring back memories of the movie if you grew up with the movie. I can't say enough about it because I did have drawbacks with it, but I think it's just great. I think it's a perfect... I watch it every October, every Halloween. I watch it. And usually I watch it with some Groovy Ghoulies. And I watch it with its prequel, which we will talk about in a moment. Listen to this.
There was a noise upstairs.
That's the same noise we heard earlier.
Come on. There's nothing here.
Just a long corridor with lots of doors.
Where did the wolf's footprints go?
Well, as far as I can see, they go down to the corridor about midway and...
And what?
They vanish.
Shh.
I think I heard
something. Change. Which door are they coming from?
Let's tiptoe down the hall and see if we can find out.
It's coming from inside this room.
Try opening the door.
I'm ready to run.
So am I. Go on, open the door.
Okay, be quiet, everybody.
What do you see, Jim?
The room's empty.
Who could have made the sound of rattling chains?
Look, there's some chains on the floor. That's the sound, all right. What caused him to rattle?
Maybe it was a ghost.
I'm beginning to believe that this place is really haunted.
We'd better leave while we still can.
Lorraine's right. We must call the police to come and find James.
Good idea. Let's go. Hey, who closed the door?
I did. I don't know.
I'm going to start our final segment using the same books I use for Orgy of the Dead. I just want to read real quick. Page 444, Make a Wish, from Mike Weldon's Psychotronic Encyclopedia film, Mad Monster Party. And he has Ken Korobkin and Harvey Kurtzman. Apparently, doing some research after the first segment for this, apparently, Forrest Ackerman might not have had anything to do with this. It feels like he would have, because it's got that punniness to a bunch of it, but apparently, maybe not. But, you know, that's not for me to decide. That's for history to weigh in on. What was I saying? Oh, Boris Karloff provides the voice for Baron Boris von Frankenstein in a stop-motion puppet comedy filmed in Animagic. Forrest J. Ackerman contributed the screenplay, there you go, which includes a hunchback with a Charles Laughton imitation voice, the Invisible Man with a Claude Rains voice, a creature with a Peter Lorre voice, and just about every other famous monster of film land. Phyllis Diller provides the voice of her puppet, Boris's ugly wife, also with the voice of Gail Garnett. All right. And now we'll go to the We Hate Horror Films horror film book from, was it, Cinebooks? Page 148. In between, what do we got? We're in between... Mad Monster, the George Zucco film from 1942, which they gave 2 stars, and Mad House, not the Asinitis film, the Vincent Price one, which they gave 2 stars. And after that, Madman Zero. That's pretty standard for slashers. Circa 88, pretty much every book hated slashers. All right, Mad Monster Party, 2.5 stars. Hey! A monster of a convention is the setting for this animated feature made using the Animagic process, a stop-motion photography technique that uses 3-dimensional figures. The Worldwide Organization of Monsters, WOM, actually they don't say that, I just said, has come together to select a new leader to replace the soon-to-be-retired Baron Boris von Frankenstein, voiced by Boris Karloff. And all the biggies are present. The werewolf, Dracula, the creature from the Black Lagoon, King Kong, Dr. Jekyll... They give that away. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, The Mummy, and parodies of Claude Rains as the Invisible Man, Charles Laughton as the Hunchback of Notre Dame, and Peter Lorre as the Igor-like Yesh. Phyllis Diller appropriately is the voice of Baron Frankenstein's ghoulish wife. Conflict between the major monsters erupts, and there are some surprises for the Baron's normal nephew, Felix Flanken, who makes a mistake of falling for one of his uncle's mechanical creations. The animagic techniques works fairly well, but nobody's going to mistake this for a Ray Harryhausen film. As with the majority of cheap animation efforts, this was made strictly with the kiddie audience in mind, although animation buffs might find it interesting for a while. I like it how they seem to like it, and then they just badmouth it in the end. That is the horror film, folks. I don't know. It's like there's a gray picture on the front of Zombies. It's over 700 films on video cassette with a foreword by Vincent Price. Yeah, they hate a lot of stuff in this. But it's always been a book I've owned all my life, and yeah, okay. Well, yeah, apparently Forrest Ackerman may or may not have been involved in this film. I'm really not sure. But it's, yeah, I guess the whole thing was supervised by Tadahito Mochinaga at MOM Productions in Tokyo, which is cool. And yeah, Harvey Kurtzman, who was with Mad Magazine, worked on the script with Len, and Jack Davis of Mad designed the characters, most of the characters, I think. And Jack Davis did that great Frankenstein poster, you know, the one with Frankenstein in his son of Frankenstein outfit, where he's like on a path winding down from Frankenstein's castle. If you know what I'm talking about, you're going, yeah. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you're going, huh? But you should look it up regardless. Mad Monster Party is out on a Blu-ray DVD combo pack. I suppose you can just get the DVD too. The tricky thing is, what I have read is that the negative has a big scratch throughout it, and the amount of money it would have taken to fix it, the studio couldn't justify doing it. So they used, I think, like an interpositive to do the DVD, and the DVD looks really nice. But when they use that same source for the Blu-ray, there are some problems. Some of the Blu-ray looks really nice. Some of it really gives the game away, the artificiality of all of it. And some of it just doesn't look good at all. The scene, I believe it's, I watched the DVD for this. I didn't watch the Blu-ray. I haven't watched the Blu-ray in a while. But I seem to remember the thing that almost made me turn the Blu-ray off the first time was, as they're entering the banquet hall, there's a scene where, like, the doors open and they're all, it's kind of, camera's kind of high up on them, looking down on them. And I remember that shot looks awful on the Blu-ray. I believe that's that shot. And that's a tricky thing, is that some of the Blu-ray looks really good and some of it just does not. And it's sort of too bad. You wish they could have done a better job, and like I said too, some of it kind of gives game away a bit, sort of. Now, what do I got? Oh, let me wrap everything up here with this. In, I believe it was 72? Yes, 72. Rankin and Bass produced a regular cell animation series, hour-long special for the ABC Saturday Superstar Movie, September 23rd, 1972, called Mad, Mad, Mad Monsters, with Bob McFadden doing his Boris Karloff impersonation. And it's basically a prequel. It's the monster getting married. It's the monster's marriage. Now, his bride doesn't fully look like Phyllis Diller's character does in Mad Monster Party, but as all of them die at the end of Mad Monster Party, I imagine... Oh, did I just ruin that? Oh, I just did. No, I didn't. I didn't. I said that earlier. As the Mad, Mad, Mad Monsters is when Dr. Frankenstein is still living in Transylvania, and he's setting up the big wedding and inviting all the monsters and everything. And it's actually quite fun. It's tricky because you feel chronologically like you should watch it first, but it actually kind of works better after it because it's got a quicker pace to it. It's only like 45 minutes long or so, maybe a little shorter. So, but it doesn't have the animagic and such that's really wonderful. You know what? I've got to correct something I said earlier on here. Give me a second, everyone. Hey, it's me. I'm back. I just realized I goofed something. So Francesca and Dracula are dancing on the balcony here, and I realized that I goofed it. I don't know why I said this earlier on, but hey, that's part of this. I kind of record these live. You know, it takes a while to edit in all the interstitials and stuff, but I'm kind of just doing this live and on the fly. I got it backwards. One of the reasons why that scene is kind of dull is the camera is sitting sort of where the doors are, looking at them. You could see the edge of the balcony, and then you just see kind of a rather flat gray background with clouds, and they're dancing around singing this rather dull song. But then right near the end, suddenly the camera goes out like it's positioned hovering above the ocean, and you can see the whole side of the castle and the balcony and everything. So that's actually really cool, and I got it completely wrong earlier. I apologize, you Mad Monster Party fanatics. Whoops, sorry about that, guys. Well, that's going to happen. So that's Mad Monster Party, everyone, and that's I think that's a fun double feature. It's one maybe you shouldn't show kids, or maybe you could show kids. There's nothing terribly erotic about Orgy of the Dead. It's more goofy than anything. But let me play this for you, and then I'll just come back, and we'll say goodnight to this episode.
It's locked. Here, let me try it. It won't budge.
How will we get out? There's no windows in this room.
Let's holler for help.
There's no one around here for miles.
It's solid oak. It'd take a bulldozer to break it down.
Listen. There's something outside in the hall.
What did you hear?
It sounded like rustling cloth.
Shh. I hear it too. It's coming near. Everybody get up against the far wall. Crouch down and be very quiet. Shh, quiet now. Do you still hear it?
It's getting closer. Oh, I wish I were home. What are we going to do?
It's right outside the door.
That door's locked. We're safe in here.
Listen, it's at the door.
Oh, it's trying to get in.
Don't say a word.
Felix doesn't actually arrive on the island until about 55 minutes in. I thought it was more like 35. Why did I think that? The party begins around 35. Boy, I'm sorry, everyone. I'm screwing up the Mad Monster Party timelines and things horribly here. I think you get the gist of what I'm talking about, but hey, sometimes it happens, you guys. Sometimes it happens. It's Halloween. Please forgive me. So, we're talking Halloween right now. Yeah. Halloween's awesome. I hope you guys enjoyed episode 12. Forgive me for not posting more of these. I sort of look at 1 Minute with Night of Horror and A Minute to Dismember as being a Dan's Driving double feature episode, but a long game version of it. I would love to do more of these. I hope to, Night to Dismember will be done in November, probably a month or so after, I think. Maybe December, but there'll hopefully be more time to do Dan's Driving Double Features for a little while at least. Folks really seem to like the Minute podcast, so I'm not going to leave those behind. So anyways, Orgy of the Dead, Mad Monster Party, episode 12 in the can. I really hope you enjoyed it. I know you guys are going to love episode 13. Just in time for Halloween. Thank you so much for listening, everyone, and have a happy Halloween, and I will talk to you soon. I can't decide, do I want to go to the castle and hang out with the monsters and have a party, or do I want to stand in the little clearing with Criswell and watch the strange burlesque show? You think it would be easier to pick which one? I'm going to have to get back to you on that. Good night, guys. Happy Halloween.
The real ghost. Blocking the doorway.
It's coming toward us. We're up against the wall. We're trapped.
Help!
Okay, you guys. This is the police. Stick up your hands.
Police? Look at the ghost.
He's standing there with his hands up in the air.
Ghost? I'll show you your ghost.
Oh, look. It's a man.
Yes, sonny, it's a man. He's Fingers Alden, a notorious counterfeiter. We've had our eyes on him for a long time. Okay, Joe, we've got him. Radio headquarters has sent a patrol car. We've been watching this old place for several months, and Fingers Alden has been using this old house to print counterfeit money in. Mr. and Mrs. Fletch have been in a rest home upstate. Now, this crook capitalized on the idea that the old couple disappeared mysteriously. He started a rumor that the house was haunted. He was the one who made those frightening sounds to scare away anyone who might have come around.
Yeah, and it would have worked if those kids wouldn't have come snooping around.
Then where's Jane?
Here I am. I was pulling off the old mailbox on the front porch when something black was pulled over my head. Next thing I knew, I was tied up and lying on the floor of the attic with a gag in my mouth.
What was the purpose of trying to scare us away? We never would have found that crook in this big old house.
Well, his printing room was well hidden, but he couldn't take the chance of anyone discovering it.
Then we did see something at the window as we walked across the field.
Yeah, that was me in this here ghost outfit.
Then it was your eyes behind the picture.
This old house is honeycombed with secret passages. The picture was one way he could spy on anybody that was brave enough to come into the house.
Well, we found the rattling change, but what caused that wolf howl?
Look in this closet.
It's a record player.
There's a record on the turntable.
Play the record.
A record of a howling wolf.
I wish I had a record like that. Boy, could I have some fun.
The wolf footprints and the dust on the stairs. How were they made?
Well, they were made with this long pole with the imitation wolf feet on the end of it.
It was a sweet setup, and it would have worked, too. Hope you Snoopy kids are satisfied.
Your counterfeiting days are over, Fingers. Come on, you're going downstairs.
Well... It looks like that we solved the mystery of the empty house on Haunted Hill.
There'll be no more ghost activities in this place.
Boy, well, we have a story to tell the gang back at the party.
Oh, we've forgotten about the party. Is the hour up yet?
Oh, we're 5 minutes late. Oh, it won't win the prize.
This has been the most exciting Halloween party I've ever been to.
And on top of it all, we discovered a ghost.
Yes, the legend of the haunted house is over. We have solved the mystery of the empty house on Haunted Hill.
Yay!